Thank you for listening. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan on community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/jpmlive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations coming up for this first Friday, October 3rd. We chat with the artists for tonight's Moving Through the Boreal Forest, an immersive performance installation at the Alaska State Museum, which uses projection, percussion, and puppetry in exploring the artist's relationship with the boreal forest. Spencer Edgars is here with an arts preview of tonight's First Friday and Beyond from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And there's a new show premiering this Sunday on our sister station, KRNN, called The Lilting Banshee. We talk with Jane Hale about this new show focused on Celtic music. It's Juno Afternoon on KTOO, made possible with your support. Donate and become a member at ktoo.org.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinoch John Martin. And the word this week is ch'ak.
Ch'ak.
That means eagle. And here's a sentence.
Yan da kin ch'ak.
The eagle is flying there. Let's hear it again.
Ch'ak.
Eagle. Gunash Chish Tchune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinoch John Martin was Dakdain Tan and a child of a Kagwantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tak anakaya ha anikak gunish cheesh.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Before we start today, programming note, next Tuesday, October 7th, in addition to voting, we'll also have a special Juno Afternoon for you featuring Josh Fortenberry, who will share a couple of tunes and preview his new album ahead of the release shows happening next weekend. Tonight, though, at the Alaska State Museum, Moving Through the Boreal Forest, an immersive performance installation will take place from 6 to 7 p.m. It's one of the final public events surrounding the current exhibit called In a Time of Change, Boreal Forest Stories, which wraps up at the museum on October 11th. In addition to the performance this evening, there is a youth activity poetry and shadow puppetry workshop for grades 4th through 6th happening tomorrow afternoon. And I hear from Jackie Mann over at the museum that there is two slots still available, right? So you can hop on over to lam.alaska.gov, find out more about that puppetry workshop, get your 4th through 6th grader signed up. I am joined now in the studio by the artists for this evening's installation. I have Maite Agopian, who made her first wooden marionette in Prague in 2017. Since then, she's studied with master puppeteers in the U.S. and Europe to learn the art of puppet construction and performance. Gunath Chishwasiti, welcome in.
Thank you.
Hey, so nice to have you here. We also have Sean Dowgray, is a classical percussionist specializing in modern and contemporary music. Wasiati, how are you today?
Good, thanks. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. And Daryl Farmer is the author of Where We Land, a collection of short fiction largely set in Alaska, and also Bicycling Beyond the Divide, a travel narrative that chronicles a bicycle journey around the U.S. West. Gwyneth Cheese, for being here today.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Daryl. And I should mention that although many of you are from, well, all of you are from different parts of the world, you all currently reside in the place we lovingly call Fairbanks, Alaska.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're part, and I think this, In the Time of Change, which is the group, we had them on in the spring. We talked about this show, the Boreal Forest Stories. And they that group is centered there in Fairbanks. So y'all know each other up there. Okay, that's good. We're going to get into that a little bit more here. But I wanted to first find out if one of you can tackle the main show that is happening at the museum, In a Time of Change, the Boreal Forest Stories exhibit. Can one of you tell me a little bit about it overall?
Yeah, sure. So,
Sean.
In a Time of Change, Boreal Forest Stories is or was the main interdisciplinary collaborative effort of In a Time of Change. They've had a couple of different themes. I think the Boreal Forest Stories was the third one.
Spring. There was a couple different projects that went along.
Yeah, and they're usually like two-year collaborative cycles. And
okay.
So Boreal Forest is one of those cycles. And I learned about it the same year I moved to Fairbanks. It was actually, they put out the call for proposals for it. And I was like, this looks really, really cool. Both because it's, everyone will be pushed outside of their general working disciplines and specializations, but also because it seemed like it was going to attract a lot of people. And I think we had about 70 people that were either scientists or artists working together somewhat regularly over the course of 2 years.
Wow.
To create art that was informed and dialogued and interacted with some of the science work that was going on up in Fairbanks as well, too. So this is something that, I mean, the Boreal Forest Stories exhibit and the piece that we have along with it is something that culminated as part of that 2 year cycle.
I see. Okay.
But it's something that more largely in a time of change likes to look at different thematic things around the world and have multiple kinds of collaborative cycles.
Gotcha. And they'll continue to do that.
Yes.
And for those that don't know the Boreal Forest, I know it's like one of the largest, you know, considered one of the largest areas of forest around the world. Does somebody want to tell us a little bit more about the Boreal Forest?
It is the largest forest in the world. It covers three continents. And there's a lot of biodiversity within the forest itself in different regions.
So. I think I had to educate myself too, and I think it says it spans the northern hemisphere across Canada, Russia, Scandinavia, and parts of the U.S. It's about 30% of the world's forest area, which is – that's huge. It provides important ecosystem services as habitat for thousands of species and supports indigenous communities. It's pretty amazing up there. Yeah,
I think I didn't even realize it till this moment. We're not in
here,
it.
No,
here.
That's why I had to take my branches.
Yeah,
they're not the same trees.
You're in a rainforest here. It's a different kind of forest down here in Juneau. So that's the Boreal Forest, and that's pretty amazing. So I really love that. So how did this? So I guess the idea of this performance that you all are doing came from this work over the 2 years. So how did you three decide to work together? Because we have a puppeteer marionette person, we have a musician, and we have a writer. And so where did all this intersection happen? Like, did y'all know each other before the project?
Nope, not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah, that was really cool about it. In the early stages, everyone sort of, I think we got like 15 minutes or like a small presentation slot to say, here's who I am, sort of here's what I do. And so we all did one of those. And Maite and I think...
Very quickly. Yeah. I was like, ooh, musician.
Someone to talk to.
Ah, interesting.
I need
okay.
to contact him.
I was going
to
say, it's like the kickball team. You're like, I don't want to work with that person. I do want that person on my team. We need Daryl over there to kick the ball really far. Yeah, I see. Okay, that makes sense. So you all had a chance to sort of introduce each other, figure out what might happen. And then so you two decided to work together, Maite and Sean. And then where did Daryl come into the mix?
Yeah, Daryl. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I came in. Yeah, after the fact, I was so excited because we had done a presentation before on stage where we each did something individual. So I was familiar through both of their work through that, and then.
And we were looking for a writer.
When they invited me to join them, I was just so thrilled because I was so enamored with their work.
Yeah.
But my challenge was to come in and try to add something without disrupting the dynamic that the two of them clearly had together.
Right.
But it's pretty interesting because we gave through the whole thing, we gave a concert performance and everyone had a chance to share something. So we did one of our earlier pieces. Daryl read some of his material and we hadn't even spoken to Daryl yet. Mm-hmm. So we were pretty far through the cycle.
Mm.
And Maite and I had been working on this piece that we're presenting tonight, and it was very much a sort of back and forth process where she would make something, I would look at it, I would create some recordings, send them back to her, and it just draft after draft after draft. And we were both at this point where we're like, something's happening, but we're not quite sure. Something is missing, and we don't know what it is, and we can't figure it out. And then we had this performance, and when I heard Daryl read for the first time, I was like, that's exactly what it is. Mm. And then Maite and I had our next meeting, and Maite, without even talking to her, Maite said, so I heard Daryl read. And so it was just we both knew, and then we approached Daryl, and you, I think you had said that you had always wanted to work with music and other things. Yeah. So it was just amazing how it had been there the whole time, and it just took us that situation to find it.
It's interesting because, you know, I can imagine with the two of you working sort of with puppetry and music, and then it's like, then the writer comes, gives a little cohesion, gives a little through line, gives a little structure, right, to sort of help the storytelling maybe. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
It's the words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a really strong visual component. We have a really strong music component, and then to have that text to really take both of those to the next level and actually bring them together.
That's cool.
It really helps.
Maite, I have a picture here of you working with, I'm not going to attempt to say this name here, the
Philo.
Is that the easy? Is that the short name?
Philo name.
And which is the character or the puppet, the marionette that is in here, which is kind of cool. It's really interesting. Did you make that?
So yeah, absolutely. I made that. I was very inspired by one talk from one scientist, and all her work was about this moth that lives in on our trees that we see, and we see this, we witness this moth eating our leaves. And so I was both interested in the visual aspect of it and about the story, because pretty much what she was, the science of her life cycle, it was so dramatic that I was like, this is just a story in itself. I don't have to invent anything. I can just dramatize it. And so that's how this story came to
That's
be.
Awesome. That's so there. I know in your intro, I said that you started making your first wood marionette in 2017. Mm-hmm. Were you doing puppetry and marionette work before that, before building them?
Absolutely not.
No, what were you doing before that?
I was an educator doing outreach and education. I worked at the museum up at the UA Museum of the North. I worked at the GI, Geophysical Institute. So I did a lot of work with family and outreach and kids. And so I always had this hands-on and very importance of object and learning through object. I always really liked that. And I decided that my true passion was puppetry, and I just needed to do it.
Take the plunge. How did you find puppetry originally? Was it from when you were a kid, or was it...
I think so. I mean, I'm looking now, I find things back and I'm like, oh, wow, okay, I already like had this. I already like, you know, paid attention to this and that. So I grew up in a place where puppetry is there.
And because where did you grow up?
I grew up in Switzerland.
Switzerland. Okay. So is that a big part of the culture there?
I mean, in Europe in general.
In Europe
puppetry
in general.
Puppetry has a role, right? You have puppetry theaters and you go there and you have toys and things. And it's very, and of course you have TV shows that are, you know, kind of handmade and small puppetry stories. But I guess, I don't know. I guess I kind of had to return to it kind of later. I really like the hands-on aspect. Like I really like to make, so to build.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a workshop. I did a wood making, a wood carving workshop prior to going to do the marionette.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. But I guess the storytelling, I really like that it mixes the making, which you can use. I mean, you can use wood, but I use also a lot of other material. And it goes with the storytelling, and it really includes music in all its form, and the collaboration is infinite. There's just no end to what you can do with
it. I'm gonna ask one more question because I'm so curious about it, because it seems like it was in you, like it was, the puppetry was in you, as we used to say, the music is in you, right, in that famous song. But in this moment, was there a moment you recall where you were like sitting there and you're looking out the window going, I'm going to go to Prague and make a marionette?
I was, okay, true story. I was behind a computer because at this point I was doing a job that was not very much with people, was more in front of a computer doing the job for other people. And I was miserable. And I was like, nope, that's not what I want. I don't want to have a screen in front of me. I want to make something.
You want to be tactile,
I want to have tactile. And I don't know exactly why. I was like, Puppet Workshop Europe.
Wow.
And this one came up and I applied and...
That's amazing.
That's how it started, the whole thing.
That's cool. Well, congratulations on that. Finding that, you know, passion for yourself.
Finding the passion.
Getting out behind the computer. I love it. That's pretty good. So, Sean, let's talk to you a little bit about... You're a classical percussionist. I do have a picture here as well of some of the instruments that you use, various different things. And I guess with being a percussionist, you can kind of bang on anything, really, right?
Yeah, we say we have no instrument.
Right.
Depending on the year, the month, the day, I might be playing something completely different than what I'm playing tonight.
Yeah, that's
and
amazing.
What I'm playing tonight is completely different than what I played on the last concert that I did. So,
wow.
Yeah, you don't get bored. That much I can tell you. I don't think I would have made it in music if I had been any other instrument.
To be stuck to one kind of thing. Yeah.
Go ahead.
When did it start for you? When did the beginnings of your percussion, was it when you were a kid? Were you studying classical music? Like your parents forced you into something and then?
Yeah, I was in middle school and had to take a year of music, and I wasn't gifted with singing, so wasn't going to do that.
Neither.
So I went into band and you just basically fill out a sheet that you rank what instrument you want.
Mm.
And so I put drums and percussion and didn't even fill out the rest of it.
Oh, interesting.
And then my mom's friend's son was the captain of the drum line. So I went up to the band director and I said, if you give me drums, I will take lessons. And to any band, I didn't know this at the time, but to any band director, that's gold. If they know that the student's interested enough to take lessons outside of class.
That's so cool.
I got it, and it like completely flipped my life. I just became all about it. I found a great teacher there in Kansas City, and he guided me into the next steps. And I finished high school at the Interlochen Arts Academy, which is, you get to focus on music, but there are other arts there, dance, theater, film, things like that too. And then went to college, undergrad, for music. And I was really sort of gearing up to be an orchestral percussionist. At a certain point, I decided I didn't want to do the audition circuit for orchestral percussion. It's really intense and there's no guarantee.
Right.
It doesn't matter how good you are. And there's nothing for second place in those auditions.
I like to say in those situations that there's no ladder, right? There's no anything based on your experience doesn't matter. It's like whatever's in the room right at the moment, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's something that I knew it wasn't going to sustain me or fulfill me to the fullest extent. And so I started looking into other areas. And so, modern, avant-garde, experimental. I like to say exploratory music.
Okay.
And
exploratory.
It feels a little bit less intense. And it is more about exploring ideas rather than training and refining a very specific set of ideas that you seek to constantly uphold and master.
So, seems like freedom a little bit.
I think it felt that way. Yeah. And that's actually what ultimately brought me to Fairbanks for the first time, was to do my master's in percussion up there. And I had two pieces that no one had played before that I really wanted to just learn and take a chance with. And that was my project. And then over time, it really wasn't until coming back that creating my own music started to happen. And this was one of the first really invested attempts at that.
Well, that's really cool. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking about Moving Through the Boreal Forest. It's an immersive performance installation. It's going to be taking place tonight at the museum from 6 to 7 p.m. The museum's open for First Friday. It's free on First Friday, and this performance is also free. It's the final sort of public event surrounding the current exhibit, In a Time of Change, Boreal Forest Stories, which wraps up on October 11th. We're talking with the artists, Matei Agopian, Sean Dowgray, and now we're going to talk with Daryl Farmer a little bit, because obviously from your bio that I read at the start of the interview, you're into bicycling, which is pretty
cool. I am into bicycling. I'm, in fact, in the middle of a bicycle tour right now. My bike is waiting for me in Okanagan, Washington.
Oh, wow.
And the plan is to go across to the coast and then down the coast to the Bay Area and possibly on from there. So.
And do you write while you're going? Is that the idea? You're creating these journeys, meeting people? Or
Yeah, I do write every day.
Okay.
You know, I find sometimes I just straddle my bike on the side of the road and jot down ideas and things or descriptions of the area around me. So
that's cool.
That's bicycling and riding have always been kind of intermingled together since I first started doing it.
I feel like they're both a little bit meditative, maybe, you know, in terms of they're solo adventures, but they can be group adventures at the same time, so you can kind of get the best of both worlds. Where did writing start for you? Was it when you were a kid?
I think it stems from the fact that I grew up in a house full of books. And my parents were both readers, and my mom read to us from a young age, so I was always kind of in this booky world, although I wouldn't say that they read literature necessarily. There's more history and biographies and those kinds of books in my house. I grew up reading sports books largely for a long time. So, but that's just kind of always stayed with me.
And now you're doing travel narratives, but then you also had the book Where We Land, short fiction collection. That was mostly set in Alaska. Was that from after you moved here, you started getting ideas about little stories, or was it, where did you come up with your stories?
I did. I lived, the first time I moved to Alaska, I lived and taught out in a village and I was there for 2 years, and then I went to the University of Nebraska to study writing.
I see.
And that was the material I had.
I
at that
see.
Time. Okay. So a lot of those stories stemmed from that time.
Okay, cool. So wow, you all are amazing, like in terms of your individual journeys. And now you've come together for this performance. So what are we going to see tonight? Maite, will you start with this? What are we going to see in this performance installation?
So you're going to see three pieces and hear three pieces. And I guess what I like to maybe say is that it's mainly for adults, right? Because I think, you know, I come in and I talk about puppetry, but I think it's important to, as much as tomorrow we're doing a workshop for children, tonight is more, how can I say, we're inviting you to sit down and take the time to enter the boreal forest.
I see. Is the audience sort of experiencing a journey of walking through the forest? Isn't that kind of how it's built too a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so the music, obviously, a big part of that, Sean.
Yep. And the music features not just my own percussion playing, but there are recordings of percussion instruments that I've made that are being played back at the same time that I'm playing them. Some of the instruments that I've brought from Fairbanks are the ones I recorded, but there's also other things that you'll hear that I don't play. But there are also field recordings, and that was actually the big part. That was the starting point of the music for this whole thing, was not sitting down with pen and paper or thinking about what my hands can do or what I want to play in front of an instrument, but recording the boreal forest and just seeing what sounds happen, what I'm able to capture, and then responding to those field recordings. So you hear a mix of, I mean, snow, various different types of snow across 2 years. You hear embedded in the field recordings is one of the earliest pieces I made called Walking Project, where I just recorded myself walking on various terrain throughout an entire year.
Mm.
So you hear the ice, you hear the water turn into ice, which turns back into water, as well as a number of other environmental things like birds and trees and wind and things like that. So,
and then at the same time, we're watching Philo do various different things.
No, Philo is a short piece that we'll see at the beginning, but This one is actually shadow puppetry.
Oh, shadow puppetry, yeah. So also is going to be there tonight. Okay.
Yeah, so it's I'm only using shadow for that.
Okay.
And it's also a mix of material that were gathered during 2 years of walking into the forest, which is where we live, but really paying close attention to detail from, you know, going to micro to small scale to bigger scale, but kind of having this lengthy, like over the year, over the length of time.
Yeah, sort of listening, watching, mm-hmm. hearing, mm-hmm. just and, experiencing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's really cool because you will literally hear and see the boreal forest, but then you also see and hear the ways in which our expertise and our craft expands the literal sound recordings and, you know, visual materials of
that's
the forest.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And Daryl, are you on stage at the same time or are you in the audience? Where are you?
I'm a little of both. I come up and back and forth.
Okay.
I see my part as three sections. First, kind of helping us to think about the beauty and stillness and meditative spirit of winter.
Mm.
And then we move into a kind of darker, destructive possibilities of fire. And then there's some at the end is kind of a questioning, you know, what is our role in terms of preservation? So those are the three kind of connective tissues I try to bring to the project.
I love it. Maite Agopian, Sean Dowgray, Daryl Farmer, they are doing Moving Through the Boreal Forest tonight at the Alaska State Museum, and it's an immersive performance installation from 6 to 7 p.m. And again, tomorrow there is a couple spaces left in the Youth Activity Poetry and Shadow Puppetry Workshop for grades 4 through 6. You can find out more about that and everything that's going on at the museum at lam.alaska.gov. Maite, Sean, Daryl, thank you so much, Gunathish, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you
so
for
much.
Having us.
Absolutely. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Brad Reed with a trip to Peggy's Cove. Well, Celtic music getting us in the mood for our last segment of the day. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Before we talk about Celtic music, we're going to talk First Friday. I've got Spencer Edgars in the studio with me now from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council for this month's roundup of First Friday events, plus season, was it 52? 52 for the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Gunath Cheesh, how you do? Thank you so much, Spencer. It's a pleasure to see you on this Friday afternoon. How are you?
Likewise, Boston. Thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty well. It's a busy week here in Juno, and we're really excited to get rolling with First Friday today. We have two artists in our gallery, in the Jack Gallery. For the month of October, we have Jessica Critcher, who I believe was on the show yesterday.
Yeah, you can go back and listen to that. It was a great interview with Jessica talking about her work, Threaded Bones, and her performance that's going to be there today. Yeah, the show.
Yeah. Her work is really incredible. And then we have Lou Cacioppo, I believe is how you pronounce his name, with some really awesome sculptures, really striking stuff. So that's going to be from 4 to 7 today. We're going to have a reception coming up pretty soon here. Come by for some snacks.
Half an hour or so. Yeah. it's coming up. Yeah. That's great. And those shows will then be up. Both of them will be up for the month of October.
Yes, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, great. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's cool. And is there other things around? I know you can also go and find jack.org/first-friday, and you guys have a list of everything that's going on around. You can also get on like a mailing list and get information about First Friday from the Jack, right?
That's right, yeah. So we have on our website, we've got that webpage, First Friday, where you can go and check out everything that's happening around town. If you're hosting an event, you can also submit your information there, and we distribute that information. You can also sign up for our newsletter if you like. And that's what we like to do.
Get the newsletter. It's really helpful because it sort of gives you everything that's going on in and around town, not just for First Friday, but things that are going on as well throughout the month. And then you have other, because you're not only like presenting a new season of stuff, which we'll get into in a second, but then people also do things at the Jack all the time.
Yeah. So we've got some really exciting things coming up. So Zach Pease is our special events producer.
Yeah.
And he's the reason why we're able to do some really exciting new things. We just had a really successful stand-up show at Devil's Club that sold out. And then next up, later this month, we are producing Juno's very first live tabletop role-playing game performance.
That's going to be so fun. If anybody has ever seen Critical Role on YouTube or anything, it's similar to that. Yeah. Connor Lundrum is going to be on the show to talk about that performance here coming up. That's on the 16th, I think, or the 18th. They're going to come on the show on the 16th. And cool. So that's going to be really fun. It's going to be over at Perseverance Theater, right?
Yep. Yeah. That's going to be cool. So fun. It's probably going to sell out, so buy your tickets now.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun adventure. Yeah.
We've got our pumpkin spice market coming up towards the end of the month. That's the 25th. That's super popular. Come and get an early start on holiday shopping. Get in the mood for Halloween. And then we also have on October 29th, we're bringing back our stress-free art nights.
Okay.
So if you just want to come hang out in the Jack Main Hall and just do some arts and crafts, it's by donation. And that's a really awesome way to just come and unwind and be creative.
Sweet. And then are you still hosting Juno Piano Series this year as well?
Yes, we are. Okay. And I did want to mention, along with First Friday today, we're actually having Piano Series tonight right after the gallery reception. So that's going to be 7 p.m. tonight in the Jack Main Hall.
Yeah, it looks like the Tong Shepherd Duo.
Yes.
Tonight at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
So go to First Friday and then hang out and then watch the performance.
Yeah, you can spend all of First Friday at the Jack if you want. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. And then you also have, obviously, we're all looking forward to Gallery Walk, which is coming up in December. I don't know if that's considered part of the season, but you have season 52. So tell me about season 52 and what's going on with that.
So our season of events typically starts in October and then runs through September of the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got all kinds of great programs lined up, things that people have come to know and love, like our Technically Art series. That next one is going to be in January 2026. It's going to be working with L.G. Rehfeld. It's going to be financial literacy for artists. So that's going to be really cool.
Nice.
And then, of course, we do have wearable art coming up in February. It's coming up quicker than we think. But
it's only a few months away, yeah, if you think about it. Yeah, I know that's going to be a big project. And was there a theme for this year?
This year's theme is camp.
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 As in C-A-M-P exclamation point?
That is correct, yes.
So take that as you may, right?
Yes, yes. So mm-hmm. we've got a bit of a twofold meaning there. We're really excited to see what people come up with. And we think it's going to be a great fit for our community. And yeah, we're super excited about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that's going to be in February as it has been. And that's every other year now, right? Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, and what else is in season 52?
We've got our usual Clink wine tasting fundraiser in March.
Mm-hmm.
That's really fun as well. And then, we throughout the season, we have our markets. So we're going to have that pumpkin spice market as well as one thing that I'm really excited about in November is we're having a book fair and author's market. And that, I think the first one was last year, the year before.
I think it was the year before I went to it. I had a blast at that.
Cool.
Yeah, that was so fun because all the all the writers were there with their books. Yeah. And yeah, it was really good. You got to meet people. It was really fun.
Yeah, it's a great concept, and we're excited to bring it back again. Lots of great stuff happening. We're still doing our grants and scholarships, as well as continuing to offer our like postering service and stuff like that. And so this is going to be really great. And just really excited for it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun season. And then I do know that I've also gotten emails from y'all because your annual meeting is coming up.
That's right.
Right.
That's
and is anybody's anybody's able to go to the annual meeting?
Yes. So our annual meeting's coming up on October 15th. It is open to the public. And then we are inviting our members to come and join us as well to make their voices heard. We'll be giving updates on our executive director search, as well as getting our new slate of board members who are nominated. So we'll be voting on them as well. And then right after that will be the board meeting with the new board members.
I see.
That's
okay.
Also open to the public.
Okay. So to recap, because there's a lot going on, you have a big job, Spencer.
Yeah.
You're going to be busy this year. So we have First Friday Tonight with Jessica Critcher and the other gentleman's name?
Lou Cacioppo.
Yep, and that's going to be running for the month of October. Then there's a couple other October events, the Roll for Your Life mm-hmm. and the Pumpkin Spice Market, and then also the annual meeting. And then for the rest of the stuff coming up, of course, you're going to come back. We'll talk every month about different things that are going on. We'll highlight these things. But I know like the stuffed market in December, all those wonderful things will be coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But those are your immediate needs, which is First Friday, Juno Piano Series tonight as well.
That's right.
And then the Roll for Your Life. I'm so happy that Zach was able to take the plunge with presenting comedy and that Sam Miller sold out. Because I think when he was on the show talking about it, we were discussing the idea that if it goes well, maybe we can get more comedians in Alaska.
Yeah.
So have you all talked about that? Like, is the idea to maybe keep thinking about getting more comedians up here?
Yes, that is the idea. And I think I heard several people kind of discussing this, which was, and like at the show too, people were saying like, man, we really need more laughter and comedy in our lives. Just
I think we do
relieve the stress a little bit.
I think we do. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, Spencer Edgars from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, giving us a wrap up on First Friday. Of course, if there's anything you want to know about First Friday and you have an event for First Friday, go to jahc.org/First-Friday. You can submit your event, but you can also see all the events. And I highly recommend getting on the mailing list because it's really the best way to get those emails. And you just have it then for on your phone. You can see everywhere you need to go and who's doing what. Because as the fall season hits, Spencer, the First Fridays are getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes.
More events are happening, and it's always such a wonderful day in Juno. So I really appreciate you. Did we get everything in? I want to make sure we mentioned everything.
Pretty much, yeah. I think that'll about do it for me today.
Okay.
Really appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming in, Spencer Gwyneth-Geesh. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's Mike Lane with today's On This Day segment. You can listen to Mike every morning on KTOO during Morning Edition, Monday through Friday.
From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Friday, October 3rd, and on this day in 1954, with three long whistle blasts and the strains of Auld Lang Syne echoing out from its speakers, the Alaska Steamship Company's SS Denali bid a long farewell to Gastineau Channel residents as it departed Juneau, southbound to Seattle from its last port of call. It was the last sailing of a scheduled passenger ship to the territory, as airline transportation had effectively replaced that service. The company's vessels, however, continued normal freight service. That's a look back at this day in 1954.
That doesn't get you in the mood, I don't know what will. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. That's a little Dropkick Murphys. I'm shipping up to Boston here on a Friday afternoon. And I am joined now in the studio by Jane Hale, a.k.a. Johnny Negotiable, who does a show every Friday morning from 10 to noon on KRNN, our sister station. But now...
Hi, Boston.
Hi,
thanks for
Jane.
Having me on.
Of course, like a new show.
This is great.
From Jane every Sunday on our sister station, KRNN, at 102.7 or 103.1, called The Lilting Banshee.
Yes.
A show that is going to be focused on Celtic music. Well, Gwyneth Chishwasiti, how are you, Jane?
I'm good. Thanks. I'm excited about this new show.
So you were telling me a little bit about a lyric in this Dropkick Murphy song I just played.
Shipping Up to Boston, yeah. The lyric was written by Woody Guthrie.
Oh, wow.
And apparently Guthrie left a lot of lyrics without music.
Oh.
And I think this was first picked up by Billy Bragg and Wilco.
Okay.
They came out with an album years ago, Mermaid Avenue, where they got permission from Guthrie's family to take those lyrics and put them to music.
Oh, wow.
And Billy Bragg did a wonderful job with Yeah, I mean, Woody would have been proud.
That's
you know,
good.
It,
That's
it's
good.
Great. And then I guess the Dropkick Murphys have picked up on that.
Yeah, for sure. So why the new show? Why did you decide to do a new show focused on Celtic music?
Well, two reasons, basically. I've thought about this for a long time. But for the longest time, we've had Fiona Ritchie's national show.
That was a great show.
Thistle and Shamrock.
Yeah.
I think it went on for like 40 years.
It was a long time, yeah.
And well, last September, 2024, Fiona Ritchie decided to retire the show. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden there's a gap there. And so I've thought about it. But then this past summer, I was involved in a two-week program in Irish traditional music at the University of Limerick.
Mm.
And and it was an incredible program, about 10 hours a day of workshops and lessons and lectures. One of my favorite parts was the evening spent at the pub until wee hours listening to and playing Irish music. And it was a phenomenal experience. And then I was sitting in a cafe one morning and I thought, all of a sudden, the shape of this show became clear to me.
Mm.
You know, I saw how it should be. I do not consider myself an expert on Celtic music. And I'm seeing the show as an opportunity to really explore this music further with an audience.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Go through, and I've got my idea for the show is two segments. We'll have a first segment, which is basically take some sort of historical or thematic aspect of the music and really explore that, like women pipers or the influence of jazz on traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
In Scotland, Scottish music has the characteristic. Scottish traditional music was influenced by Baroque in a way that Irish music never was.
Okay.
So you see these influences from Baroque. You see a lot of sonatas and minuets in Scotland, sort of odd stuff mixing with the tradition. But it's great.
Yeah.
In fact, I studied with one fellow, fiddler from the Shetland Islands this summer, a guy named Chris Stout. Great fiddler, but he's trying to integrate classical technique into traditional fiddling.
Okay.
And with wonderful results.
Wow. And yeah, because that's the kind of fun aspect is, like, when I was looking into it for today, too, trying to find some good songs, like, there's classics, you know, there's classic Celtic music. I had pulled up, you know, what was it, Greensleeves.
Oh.
And that's been covered by
sure.
Everybody and their brother, right? Like,
right.
Everybody's done Greensleeves. And then, you know, all the way to something like the Dropkick Murphys,
right.
Where it's like becoming, it's a little bit more modern day influenced, as you will.
Yes, yes. Well, I think one of the incredible things about traditional music, and first of all, Celtic music, that's a kind of a marketing category, you
right,
know, created
right.
by the record companies as a
right.
you know, a shopping bag for all kinds of Scottish, Irish, Welsh, even from Brittany in northwest France. But really, traditional music is a local social phenomenon.
Mm.
So even in Ireland, you see a lot of differences between regional styles, right? But then what happened in the 20th century was all of a sudden, it became a global phenomenon.
Mm.
I mean, this program in Limerick this past summer, well, there were people from all over Europe, from Asia, from the Americas, you know, involved in this program, because now suddenly Irish traditional music is, like I said, a global phenomenon. So it's all these influences are coming in, and it's having its own influence on classical music, on even on hip-hop, believe it or not.
Well, what I love is those folks like you're talking about, like the guy you met this summer who, you know, we've had some groups on here over the past years, and maybe they weren't focused specifically on Celtic music, but I remember one group that came in, and they were classically trained musicians,
right.
But they're taking that work that they have in the form of classical training, but they're applying it to sort of modern sensibility. And so it can create all these different, you know, layered and really interesting, rich songs.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And you see it go the other way, too. You see a traditional fiddler like this guy, Chris Stout, trying to use the classical technique, but trying to make it sound traditional. So he's doing things on the violin that traditional fiddlers generally don't do, like play in the upper positions, right?
Okay.
There are some things that you don't hear in traditional fiddling, or you didn't used to hear in traditional fiddling, like vibrato.
Mm.
So he's playing on the upper reaches of the violin, but without vibrato, and it's a wild sound.
So I have a question for you. So are you going to be creating another persona like Johnny Negotiable for your show on Sunday?
No, I think I'll be myself for this
for this one. You just be Jane Hale. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun because I was like, you know, if you create a persona, then it's like, do you have to get an accent going? You know.
No, I'm afraid my Irish friends here in town tell me my Irish accent is not very good.
So we don't want to put that on the record.
That's right.
I see. Okay. So what are some of your favorite tunes?
Oh boy, you know the first show. I think what I'm going to do is spend that first hour just going through taking. Listeners on a tour of my history with this music.
You know,
where I first started listening to it and became really engaged, and how that progressed over the years. And I've got 100 favorite tunes. Women of Ireland, Manana Haran is a wonderful tune. It's an old lyric poem that's set to music by Sean O'Riordan, who was a really great force in the renaissance of Irish traditional music in Ireland in the 50s and 60s.
Okay. I just was trying to see if I could find the Women of Ireland. I just want to play a little bit of it maybe.
There's a great version by there are hundreds.
Well, this is the Chieftains.
That's good. With Sean Kane playing fiddle.
Yeah. Let's listen to a little bit of that. This is Juno Afternoon on KTO. Hits.
Oh, it's wild. It's a great tune. And the fiddler there, Sean Kane, actually got his start playing with Sean O'Riordan's first band, Chultori Hulan, musicians of the Hulan district north of Dublin. So that's where Kane got his start. And then there were other members of the Chultori Hulan that went on to form the Chieftains, Paddy Maloney, Sean Kane. Sean Potts, the tin whistle player.
Wow. So I'm curious, like when you, because you're going to talk about your journey on Sunday, which is great. I think people want to tune in. It's from 10 to noon on Sunday on KRNN 102.7 or 103.1. Or you can go online, KRNN.org. You can hear Jane's show, The Lilting Banshee, which is going to be starting this Sunday.
Yes.
And I love that history is there. But how do you, like you know so much. Like, how do you retain all of the different names and different bands and different people? Is it because it has such a fire in you?
I can't forget this stuff. It sticks. It won't go away.
Yeah, it's just like living in there.
Yeah.
Because you love it so much,
this style.
And so give us a little tease on when did it start for you? When did you first discover this kind of music?
I'd moved out to San Diego. This is 1976. Mm-hmm. I moved to San Diego, and I was living with my sister, who was in the Navy out there. And she went to a jazz concert by Bob James, the jazz keyboardist.
Mm.
And she picked up an album of his. And I'm not a big jazz fan. You know, I love some of that stuff, especially the earlier stuff. But Bob James is kind of smooth jazz that I'm not really a fan of. But he does a cover of Women of Ireland on it.
Mm.
And he starts it with the jazz saxophonist Grover Washington playing the tin whistle. And it was that sound that grabbed me.
Mm.
And I would every morning I had to walk down the hill in the dark to my work, to my job is driving a truck up to L.A. every day, and with that sound in my head. And then I happened to go to a theater. I'm a big James Joyce fan, as you know, right? There was a film of Joseph Strick, the director, made a film of Joyce's book Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man.
Okay.
And years before, he had done a film of Ulysses, which was, you know, sort of successful, as successful as something could be like that could be. Anyway, so there was a double feature, and the second movie on the bill was a film by a guy named Desmond. From 1962, of John Millington Synge's play, famous play, The Playboy of the Western World.
Oh, yeah.
And the soundtrack was done by Sean O'Riordan.
Oh.
And there was that sound again, you know, for the second time in a couple of weeks, that it starts with a tin whistle playing a wonderful Irish air, and it goes on with the jigs and reels and... And so that did it. That did it. I was a fan from that point on.
It just got in your bones.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was in my ears and in my blood. And then 2006, fast forward to 2006. I've been a fan of this music since the 70s. But then 2006, a wonderful young Irish fiddler, a guy named Cloven O'Reilly, passed through Juneau. And he was on his way up to Fairbanks to visit a girlfriend or something like that. And he stopped in Juneau. He got stuck here because the planes were down, I guess. So he arranged to give a sort of, you know, last-minute concert at the old back room. And I just found out about it. I went, and it was just magical, Boston. The music was crazy. The next day, I ran to the old string shop, which doesn't exist anymore. My friend Jim Haynes, who ran the string shop, I demanded he sell me a fiddle and teach me how to play. And
the rest is history.
Yeah, that's it. I'm still learning to play.
I love it. And you can find out more about the history. It's The Lilting Banshee, Jane Hale's new show on our sister station, KRNN, every Sunday from 10 to noon on 102.7 or 103.1, or you can go to KRNN.org. Jane, break a leg with the show.
Thank you, Boston.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to listen to that. We're going to go out with a little bit of the with Flogging Molly, Drunken Lullabies. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Thanks, Jane.
Thanks, Boston.
We'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Local stories, local events, local connection made possible by you via your donation and membership at KTOO.org. Gwyneth Cheese for listening. Next Tuesday, we have a special Juno Afternoon featuring singer-songwriter Josh Fortenberry previewing his new album ahead of release parties happening later that week. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno. 104.3 and KAUK, Juno Auk Bay, 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find the live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support comes from listeners like you and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheese, have a fantastic first Friday and weekend.